Welcome to the Gravity Podcast, where we host conversations on developing a Christian spirituality rooted in love that fosters resilient faith in everyday life.
I've said no repeatedly, but I may now finally be in a place to listen to you about getting in your Young Living downline, Ben. Welcome to the Gravity Commons Podcast. I am now interested in essential oils, so you can send me an email. Am I doing this right, Ben? You can send me an email at matt@gravitycommons.com, and I'm joined by Christy and Ben. Hello.
Yeah, I think you're doing it right, but who knows what you've just signed up for there? The AI bots are out there listening. They're listening.
I, for one, welcome our new AI overlords. I got to preach this. So we're moving into our new building, our new church building this Sunday.
Woo-hoo!
And I'm preaching a sermon. And I want to use ChatGPT to do it. I'm just going to type in all the texts. I'm going to upload all my sermons. I'm going to type in the texts, and I'm going to type in new building sermon and just see what the computer comes up with.
See what it comes. Yeah. Good. You guys, that's a good way to save time for this week.
It is fun to play with. I will say that. Like, my boys made up a rap. Like, they typed in all this stuff about Tennessee football, and then they it spit out a rap, and then they rapped it. And it was so fun to watch. So, yeah. You know, maybe rap your sermon, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, that's where that suggestion, I think that's good. Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of suggestions, sometimes listeners, you send us emails, follow up just to share personal stories or give us content ideas or ask us follow up questions for things we talked about. We received a really important email from a listener last week in our interview with Chris Morris. And the listener just wanted to let us know that I had used the phrase commit suicide twice. We were talking about mental health and suicidality. And she just reminded me that the phrase commit suicide can be triggering and is unhelpful to people who have experienced a trauma surrounding suicide. And so I just wanted to own that. Like, I didn't even realize I said it. And I had remembered it, but then forgotten it. And I appreciated the reminder. And so I just want to acknowledge that. So thank you so much. I think listener, there is all the listeners, there's two responses we can take to being sort of corrected or checked. And one is, gosh, I used to be able to say whatever I want, and now I have to be so careful. And sometimes I can use this word and sometimes I can't. And you know what? I'm committed, I think, and I want to invite all of us to just be committed to be sensitive to how words impact people. Mm-hmm. And, my experience is the vast majority of people who take the time and invest the cost in letting me know how their words impact them, that they're honest people, and they're not trying to cancel me or control me, but they're simply trying to advocate for their own self-care. Mm-hmm. And I think the Christian response is to celebrate that and seek to care for them too.
And I think the email we got was very much in that vein as well. And I think that is also a Christian response to feeling triggered or to hearing something that feels triggering or offensive to you. Mm-hmm. So I think that was an important aspect of this. And just to be clear, like some of our listeners, you may not know anything about that. Why would that term be triggering? Mm. And the preferred term is died by suicide, because commit implies some sort of wrongdoing. We commit crimes, right? And so I think that is why the preferred term has become died by suicide.
Mm. Yeah.
FYI.
Yeah. And somebody's... October is Suicide Prevention Month.
Yes.
And honestly, like, I've had really dear people in my life die by suicide. And I have a sweatshirt that says stay. And that has like the semicolon, which is the symbol that kind of represents suicide prevention. And and then on the sleeve, it just says, you know, life is better with you here. And I tend to wear that sweatshirt a lot in October, just as a way of trying to, you know, be able to communicate. This is a real thing, and it's impacted a lot of people. And so anyway.
Yeah. Mm. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we we should get into our interview today with Grace Ji-Soon Kim. She's a professor of theology at Earlham School of Religion in Richmond, Indiana, and the host of the Madang podcast, and has published in Time, Huffington Post, U.S. Catholic, and The Nation. She's an ordained PCUSA pastor and enjoys being a guest preacher on most Sundays. She's written a lot of books, but today we're talking to her about her latest book, When God Became White. Let's get into it. Dr. Grace Ji-Soon Kim, welcome to the Gravity Commons podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure. And I'm wondering, by way of introduction, maybe beyond a little bit of your bio that I just read, if you could tell us a bit about your faith formation as a Christian growing up as an Asian American immigrant, a little bit.
Yeah.
What did that look like?
So I was born in Korea and then immigrated to Canada in 1975. So we weren't a Christian family. It was a few years later after immigration. And at that time, many of the other Korean immigrants, I grew up in a small city, London, Ontario, were all going to church. So it was just a thing to do. Church was beyond worship. It was a place to learn Korean. It was a place to find employment, to find friends, celebrate birthdays. So that's how it began. And, you know, our family became very involved in the church. So that's how it got formed. And then my interest in going into ministry during my early youth days. So that's how it got formed, and much influence from the Presbyterian Church. But then my parents took us to various other denominational churches, like the Baptist on Sunday morning for Sunday school, and then Baptist, a different one, for Sunday night worship. I went to Missionary Alliance on Fridays. And because we lived in a small city, many weekends, once or twice a month, my parents either drove to Detroit or to Toronto to attend revival services, these Pentecostal ones. So I have a wide range of denominational influence.
Yeah.
In my life.
Yeah, interesting. Well, your book names a whiteness as something to dismantle, to reckon with. I wonder, maybe you could give us a brief definition of what do you mean by whiteness? And then personally for you, how did you become aware of that whiteness was something that needed to be reckoned with?
Well, whiteness simply is a social construct. I think when we think about race, we think it's biological. So we feel that it's tied to biology. So a certain group of people are born better or smarter, just more highly functional. So what whiteness is trying to understand is how this came into place, and trying to dismantle it. Because when we think about racism, it's tied in with white supremacy, white privilege. So whiteness is understanding how this is played out in our society, and which privileges white people over the rest of us. So it's really important as Christians to tackle this and dismantle this. If we are all created in the image of God, the church then has a duty and an obligation to really fight and dismantle this whiteness, which privileges one group over another.
Grace, your title, God Became White, is intriguing. It makes people, you know, double take. And you make the case that Jesus becoming white was a matter of history. I'm curious if you can double click on that for us and just how and why did this happen?
Yeah, so for me as a theologian, it was important to figure out why racism is still with us. especially, you know, I'm Korean and we have K-pop, K-drama, we have mukbang, all this influence from Korea. So that was not there when I first immigrated. So I understand the level of racism towards someone like me, which is unacceptable, but I'm trying to make sense of this. But 2023, 2020s, why are we still fighting this racism? And for me, it's really tied in to religion. I think, you know, many departments today in, you know, college and high school, the first thing to go is religion because we feel it's not that important. There's not enough funds. But we fail to understand how much influence religion has on our politics, our culture, our behavior, our ethics. And so if you're a Christian, how you understand and view God determines a lot. And we see this being played out, and we see how whiteness is being played out. So for me, I had to do a historical kind of journey to figure out why this Jesus who was born a Palestinian Jew. And if you've ever been to Palestine or Israel, the indigenous people are dark. No one is blonde-haired and blue-eyed. Of course, there's the Ashkenazi Jews who have mixed with the European culture who may look white, but the indigenous, the Palestinians are all dark, dark skin, olive-skinned. So you have to ask yourself, why did Jesus transform into white European man? And so my book explores that. And the answer is then tied into why this racism still exists and how it's destructive. I think the church has failed in many ways to call racism a sin. We just kind of say, oh, racism exists, or if a church wants to even acknowledge it. But we don't go further to say it's a sin. We must do something to eliminate it, dismantle it, and fight against it. So there was a need for this white male Jesus to legitimize what the Roman Empire was doing. They couldn't, you know, they were fighting against, they were dominating people of color, the people that looked like Jesus. Yeah. And so if you uphold a Jesus that looks like the people you want to dominate or the ones you want to kill during the Crusades, it doesn't work. You have to have a Jesus or a God that resembles you, that affirms and solidifies that, hey, white men are the closest possible to who God is. So there's many reasons, but that is one of the major reasons why this dark, olive-skinned, brown-haired, you know, or black-haired, brown-eyed Jesus became this blue-eyed Jesus in our Christian history.
We'll be right back.
Let's get back to the show.
You know, as I've talked with white Christians about whiteness and about some of these things, like you said, it doesn't have to do with biology, but often people feel attacked as if it does, you know? And so, you know, they're like, what's wrong with white? Isn't that reverse racism? What's wrong with white people? You know, that kind of thing. So, and you talk about this in the first couple chapters, the kind of the origins of whiteness, the shape of whiteness, like what, even the concept of, you know, like even the fact that we think of ourselves as white, you know, as white people is, you know, is not like rooted in any kind of like ethnic, you know, it's a social construct, as you said before. I wonder if you could just say, like, from those first couple chapters, like what are one or two things from those chapters that you find that are most difficult for people to accept or understand or grapple with? If you could just maybe highlight some of that stuff. I know a lot of our listeners, I think, end up in frustrating conversations like that as well. So could you maybe highlight a couple things?
Yeah, so thank you for saying, oh, you know, what's wrong with us white people? Right. I think what we fail to understand is these are constructs, these are structures put in place to oppress a certain group. Yeah. So as a woman, so Christy, you and I, you know, we're fighting sexism all the time. Yeah. It's embedded in our culture, in our church. You know, the churches that we attend are male occupied spaces. And it's only in recent history that women, and not all denominations, where women can be ordained and become leaders and teachers. So we know that this structure exists, but that's not to say that we women hate men. You know, I think there's a misunderstanding when, you know, some feminists were labeled as male haters. That's absolutely wrong. And it's a wrong way to understand this. You know, I myself am married to a man. I have two young adult boys or men. Why would I hate them? It's not the individuals that we are hating. We are hating the system. The patriarchy has been there to continue to subordinate women and keep us in our places, either in the home or quiet or silenced. And it varies among cultures. So when people of color are fighting racism and this construct of whiteness, it's not to say, oh, now we hate all white people. That's not the problem. The problem is this construct that allows whiteness to flourish and white supremacy to say it's okay in the church. That's the, I think, the important thing that people need to understand what my argument is. It's not the individuals. I've got tons of white colleagues and friends. You know, I minister in it's almost all white church. It's not this white people or men when we are fighting racism and sexism. It's this construct which allows a certain group to be privileged over others. This is problematic. If we're going to be Christians, then let us live out the gospel. Why are we saying one gender is better than the other or one group of people are better than the other? It makes absolutely no sense. Christ came for everybody. Joel 2:28 says, I will pour the Spirit upon all people. So I think understanding how these constructs have been created and implemented, why this even white people, the term even exists. You know, I go over the how it emerged in the beginning of the book, you know, trying to differentiate one group from another who are enslaved people. So understanding the history and why it's being used and implemented still today will help us then to understand how this is something really destructive and horrible that we need to fight against.
Amen.
Yeah. Yeah, this has been my experience too. I mean, I think once I started reckoning with whiteness as a construct, very quickly I came up against gender as a construct too, and had to reckon with both of them because they both sort of feed off each other and penetrate each other. And towards the end of your book, Grace, you you propose moving towards the embrace of a non-white, non-gendered God. And I think for many of us, the non-white God is maybe easier to get our heads around than the non-gendered God because, you know, God is portrayed in scripture using gendered pronouns and things like that. So help us out here. How do we move towards a non-gendered God and hold on in some way to gendered language to describe God?
Yeah. So, you know, I think language is powerful. I think language forms our thoughts and which, you know, our thoughts determine our actions. So if we're going to work towards embracing everyone, that we are all equal and these constructs have been put in place to make one group oppressed and subordinate over another. And going back to one of my earlier answers, that religion, and then so if we're Christians, Christianity really impacts our actions, our ethics, our behavior, how we treat one another, our neighbor. And that is really determined by our image of God. People will say, oh, it doesn't, but it really does. I grew up with a white male God my whole life. And then when I was trying to fight against racism, that's when I really decided I had to come to the conclusion that this white male God is something that has also been constructed, because the Bible, as you mentioned, have all these metaphors to talk about God. So we have, you know, the common ones are Father, Lord, Savior, King. These are all masculine. But what we need to understand is that metaphors are not who God is. They point or help us to understand who God is. And, you know, we even have theologians throughout our church history. So Augustine said, if you think that is God, that is not God. So in many ways, you know, the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not create, you know, God in a graven image, we continue to do that. You know, Christianity has been white for so long, and it has been a tool of colonialism, of war, of sexism, all these problems. And so this white male God became a very helpful way. So I think, as you said, the whiteness may be easier to get rid of because no one has seen God, but we have, in our heads, we have all these artists, you know, Leonardo da Vinci, you know, the Sistine Chapel, everything is a white old man image. But if no one has seen God and the biblical terms are just metaphors that point to God, then we really have to dismantle an image that continues to oppress either women or people of color. So in my book, I do offer many other terms that are also biblical, that are non-gendered and non-racialized. And so I hope the listeners will grab the book to read it, but it's there. And we wonder, well, why hasn't it been used? Well, it's because the church for the last 2,000 years until the last maybe 50 or 70 years have been male-dominated. All the popes, the bishops, the priests, the ministers, the theologians, they were basically all men. So of course they're going to continue to only focus on the maleness of God. But there are feminine and there are non-gendered metaphors and language about God. And I think it's time that we retrieve them and use them in our liturgies, because liturgies are part of what forms our thoughts and our actions, all our prayers and creeds and whatever liturgy that your churches may follow. It just reinforces whatever you're worshiping, whoever you're worshiping. That's why the creeds came out, because you know, the early church fathers and all the theologians thought people are just believing in all these strange things. Let's make sure they all believe in the same one, same God. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's how the creeds and the prayers all emerged, so that they would really help everyone to focus one way to think about God and to worship God.
You know, Grace, I think it's interesting to, you know, personally, as I moved towards a non-gendered God, mm-hmm. and learn different aspects in pictures of maybe who God is, it's helped my heart, I think, have a clearer picture. I think I'm just curious if maybe you've had pushback because people think, oh, wait, you're going to the opposite side. But for me, mm-hmm. I would say the more I understand God holistically, it actually forms me and impacts me. For example, there was a period of time where I was really focusing on the tenderness of God, which mm-hmm. tends to be more of a feminine aspect, right? Mm-hmm. But honestly, my heart needed to press into a God who could hold me, a God who was kind, a God who just was tender. And that formed my heart, I think, to love him maybe in a different way, but also in a more holistic way. Do you Do you find that personally? I know I'm going into like your own personal life, but.
Yeah, I think, you know, God is this infinite being and we're finite. Yeah. But we'll never come to understand the fullness of God.
Right.
But God is more than what we can imagine because yes. our brains are so finite. We're limited. And so the more vocabulary, the more images, the tender, the kindness, the loving, the embracing God,
yes.
that is all who God is. We see these images in the Bible. It's part of our tradition. And so let's embrace them. Let's move away from the gendered understanding. You know, my book, When God Became White, came out this year, but earlier in the year, in March, another book came out called Surviving God. And that one, we do, I co-wrote it with Susan Shaw, and we explore the different images because if we're going to only stick with patriarchal images of God, then it really says it's okay to do acts of violence or oppressive acts towards women. And so this becomes very dangerous. How many times have abused women been told by priests and ministers, you know, almost blaming them that why this domestic violence happened, it's your fault. You know, why were you raped? It was your fault. You were walking late at night or you were dressed that way. Yeah. But we, you know, this I'm trying to say again, how we image and how we view God really impacts this. Yeah. And so if we shift a bit and move the pendulum a little bit, so we understand the fullness of God and embrace all these other images and metaphors of who God is, then I think it will really help us, women, and it will also help a lot of the men too.
Yes.
So that's my hope at the end of the day.
Yeah. And now a word from a sponsor.
The Gravity Podcast is sponsored by the Gravity Formation Course, our 12-month cohort-based training in practical spiritual formation, where you'll learn how to notice how God is already at work in your life so you can participate more fully in the life that God shares with us. It is a discipleship process that goes beyond just gaining more knowledge and trying out some new practices. In the Gravity Formation Course, we go below the surface of our lives so that we can notice and name our deepest desires in God's presence, and to discern how God is at work in those desires to lead us toward holistic flourishing, more transformation, more life, more joy, more love. We've trained hundreds of people from all over the world in this formation framework, and it's helped many people to have a sense of God at work in their lives and learn to be more at home in God's love. If you'd like to learn more, go to gravitycommons.com/formation.
All right, let's get back into our conversation.
I think viscerally, you know, as a white man, I do know, as I talk to other white men, I do know that sometimes the threat that they feel by talking about some of these things, you know, like maybe using different pronouns for God, I think the threat they feel is rooted in their own, like, comfort with the supremacy and the privilege, right, that they have. Of just sort of assuming that, well, I'm the standard, you know, yeah. that kind of a thing. But it actually does us just as dirty as it does everybody else, you know? And I don't mean to say, you know what I mean? Like, anyway, I just like, ultimately it's not good for us. Just like it's not good for anybody else, you know? And so there is a freedom, that you're inviting us into, and so anyway, I was just, as you guys were talking as well, I was just reflecting on this experiment we did at our church a couple of years ago, I think it was. We used, Wilda Gaffney has created what's called a women's lectionary.
Yeah.
I think it's called a women's lectionary for the whole church or something like that. Anyway, so we used that. It was like maybe a couple of years ago. And she also has translations of the scriptures that seeks to do some of this work of like, you know, using sometimes plural pronouns for God. And in her psalm translations, she decided to only use the female pronoun for God in the psalms. And we have a musician at our church who writes songs based on the psalm that the lectionary gives us. And so hearing those psalms sung through, you know, his kind of interpretive voice, but also, you know, sometimes we would do a responsive reading. But I found it was interesting because I'm on board, like theologically, ideologically, like intellectually, it's like, yes, I'm on board with this, but it was still jarring for me to out loud pronounce the female pronoun as I talked about God. I was like, oh, this feels weird. Like it feels, you know, and I had to like just sit with that discomfort, you know, and we actually had people that were like, I don't want to come to church if we're going to, you know, if we're going to talk about God like that. but you know, it was like, it provoked really good conversations, but, I guess I'm just saying all of this to say that, I think even if you agree with this stuff, there's something that has to be worked out in our bodies that we don't really understand how it's impacted us until we start to pronounce, you know, or try it out, you know, talk about God with the female pronoun and see how that feels to you, and explore that, you know, and be in that. So I'm not sure if there's a question there, but if you have any reflections on that, Grace, I would love to hear them.
Thank you for sharing that. I have my own podcast called Madang, hosted by Christian Century, and I had Will Gaffney on my podcast to talk about her lectionary series. And, you know, it's very powerful, and I think we need more of it. There's so few women Hebrew scholars and New Testament scholars actually tackling this. And for much of our Christian history, it's been all white male interpreters, biblical scholars that came up with these lectionary series. So I think, you know, I think this, our generation that are kind of being exposed to it now, may have this visceral kind of effect on our bodies or in our minds. But I think over time, it gets easier. Yeah. Like when we immigrated in the 1970s, I remember growing up in elementary school, you know, grammar was a huge thing where I grew up. And I remember the term he was meant for he, she. It was like an inclusive term. So I grew up with that. So learning English as a second language, I always was taught he meant he, she. And then later in my high school and university, that was no longer the case. And I remember it was big transition for me that if you're going to have woman included in that term, that pronoun, it had to be they or he, she. You had to add that in. It was so awkward. But now I can't even go back to the 70s where, oh my goodness, that he was an inclusive term. So I think it's going to take a while. And God, because there are the feminine images and words for God in the Bible, it's not like we're creating anything new. But I think even the language God in English, because it's kind of masculine in the sense that it has the feminine counterpart, goddess, we get a little uncomfortable. But I think being uncomfortable is good. So thank you, Ben, for doing that in your church. I would encourage many other pastors and leaders to do that. I think we need to be uncomfortable at times. I think too much comfort allows us then to just stay in our comfort zones. And so when someone brings up the topic of racism and whiteness, you know, people are too comfortable. They don't want to upset whatever, you know, they feel everything's okay in the church, but not everything is. So I think we need to be uncomfortable. We have to stir the water. We have to use different pronouns to understand it. And even the pronouns are limiting, you know, because God is a mystery. God is beyond our comprehension. Yeah. And I think once the people in the pews understand that, then it'd be so much easier for them to use feminine images and nouns for who God is in the liturgies.
Yeah, gender is a metaphor for God. Mm-hmm. Grace, thanks so much for being with us today. Appreciate your faithfulness and your prophetic voice. The book again is When God Became White, Dismantling Whiteness for a More Just Christianity. Grace, if people were interested in finding you, what else you've read, are you active online? Can they find you anywhere?
Yes. So they can follow me on my Substack. It's called Loving Life. And they can follow all my work there. I have a website, a new one being constructed at this moment. But all my socials are under Grace Jisun Kim, the handles for Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and Twitter or X. So please follow me there. And you can listen to my podcast, Madang, hosted by the Christian Century. So you can go to the Christian Century website. And listen there, and hopefully people will read some of my books. And you know, when I wrote when God Became White, there are you know, study questions after each chapter. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that churches and faith communities, or just groups that are interested in fighting racism, because that's beyond the church too. Yeah. I hope people will be able to use it as a study group.
Yeah. And, thanks for being our guest today, Grace.
Thank you so much for having me.
So as Grace was talking, I remembered several months ago when the Olympics were, you know, going on in Paris, as they say.
Lovely.
And there was a couple, like, kerfuffles here stateside around trans, what was perceived to be a trans athlete, a female boxer, and also the opening ceremonies, right, had was interpreted as mocking or being a parody of the Lord's Supper. And I posted something on social media about how Christians sort of and some conservative Christians kind of jumped to take offense at what they took to be a parody of the Lord's Supper and jumped to defend women against trans athletes. And then later it came out that the director of the opening ceremonies had Dionysus pagan festival in mind, not the Lord's Supper. And that the person in question, who was a female boxer from Algeria, was in fact, has always been a woman, not a trans person. And I just sort of like cautioned us to like, what is it about this that we need to like, you know, be outraged or offended by these things? And someone responded that, you know, I was singling out a group of people for hate, which is interesting because I felt like I was trying to protect people from hate. I'm really choked up about this. No, I had something in my throat. And I thought of that when Grace was talking about how it's hard to talk about whiteness and patriarchy without white men getting upset that you're hating on them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it seems like we're singling white men out, right, to be the villains, right? And I thought her comment was really helpful. And I think part of as a white guy, Christian, part of what I think I want to recover is like, when somebody talks about whiteness and patriarchy, they aren't attacking me. They're naming the thing mm-hmm. I inhabit that does bad work for them and me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm not a villain. I'm caught up in a mm-hmm. system that causes other people harm in specific ways, but it also harms me. Mm-hmm. And so wouldn't I want to work for all of our deliverance?
Yeah.
I think that's the thing I keep coming back to, is I think there was a massive conversion for me when I was able to stop taking those critiques personally and start to see those critiques as seeking my liberation.
Yeah. Yeah, that move, Matt, has been fascinating, frustrating. For me, because I don't know how it happens where you can make that. I mean, you talked about it as a conversion, and I think there is something about it that feels conversion like, you know, it's like mm-hmm. it's like your eyes are open, you see things differently. And that move, I guess I'm frustrated by it because I want to figure out how to make it happen for people. You know, I want to figure out the right combination of words or actions that will unlock that possibility for people. And I guess that's probably just not possible, but that is, I think that is the, that's a really key thing about all of this, is there has to be, you have to have enough of a sense of identity apart from this system you're caught up in to trust that if I leave it behind, I'm still going to exist. You know what I mean? Like I feel like people feel it as an existential threat because they're caught up in a system that they fully identify with and they don't realize that they fully identify with it. And so it feels like you're attacking them when it's like, well, no, you are something other than this system and you can actually work for freedom from it. But man, it's such a stronghold for, I'm thinking of specific people that I talk to regularly, you know, it's just such a stronghold and it's so difficult to help people see what's going on. Yeah. So anyway,
I think it takes a lot of humility too. Like Matt, I think part of you learning and walking and growing and having eyes to see is that your heart posture is humble. And that is not true of a lot of people. At least that I experience.
But I can be not humble too, right? I don't want to brag, but I can be pretty not humble. I guess humility. I actually think that it's more of like, I actually feel it in my body. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel it in my body a bit. So I want to call it empathy, but maybe that's not the right word. But I think I have seen how people, you know, I'm reminded of like the Exodus, right? When, we're told about how God heard the cries of the Israelites. And I forget the language that's used in the Hebrew, but it's, some translations say that it pierced his heart, and some translations say he was moved with compassion. Mm. Like, so I think it's a godly thing to be impacted by others' suffering and then to move to alleviate it.
Yeah.
I think that's a godly thing. And I think that for some reason, I've been able recently to not be angry or offended by the fact that people think white guys have some things to learn. And I've been like more moved to compassion, and maybe it is humility, Christy, but I feel it. You know what I mean? I feel it on my insides.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's why it's fascinating to me is I don't know. I don't know if it's just, you know, humility, which, you know, you can see that as a virtue that I'm hopeful, you know, and empathy, I think, is helpful. I actually just read it. We put this in the Friday links, a while back, but, actually found it really fascinating. They talked about the difference between empathy and compassion. I was saying that there can be some problems with empathy, that it can be sort of crippling and send you into like taking care of yourself instead of taking care of others.
Yeah.
So anyway, I found that fascinating. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the key is. And maybe there's no key. I mean, maybe that's why I'm frustrating. I'm trying to turn it into a science project.
Yeah.
When, you know, like Spirit of God blows where the Spirit blows and you cannot see where it's coming from or where it's going. But, you know, every once in a while, somebody wakes up and converts and is born again.
Yep.
But we don't get to control it. So anyway, I guess then my prayer is may God continue to open our eyes.
Yeah.
To help us to be participants in freedom and flourishing and goodness and love for all creation.
Well, quick Bible quiz time, Christy. Do you know why Mary named her son Jesus and not Larry?
Why did Mary name Jesus, not Larry?
Because Larry's not a good name
Ben,
somebody.
Ben.
Okay,
Ben.
All right, sorry.
Can I talk to you for a second? Ben.
Just over here.
Zip it.
Matt.
Zip it.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm trying to ruin the joke.
I'm trying to ruin it. Larry as like all my examples when I tell a story.
Christy, Larry and Lucy. Mary did not name her son Larry because the angel was very clear and said Noel.
Okay.
Yeah.
No L. Like no. No L.
Yeah, yeah. And she was like, well, that
that eliminates
that rules out Lance and Larry and Lucifer. I mean, lots of names that were no longer on the table.
You know what, Matt? I hope some of our listeners just clicked off.
No, I talked to a listener this morning who said to me, I really appreciate your sense of humor. Now,
lots of people are saying
when I pressed her on this, she said, I have to clarify. I can remember two jokes you've told that I've liked.
Right.
Two jokes.
Ironically, I like your sense of humor. I just don't like the jokes that your sense of humor produces. I don't know. That doesn't make any sense.
I'm batting 2%.
This feels like
2%. Yeah, better
lots
than
of people
one.
Are saying.
You miss every laugh. You don't take a swing at. Mm. Okay.
Right. There you go.
Wayne Gretzky. I think that's what he said.
So. All right, listener. Until next time.
All right.
Peace.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Podcast. If you're finding it helpful, please tell your friends about it. Word of mouth is the best advertising. Ratings and reviews online also help others find the podcast. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. To join discussions about the podcast and lots more, join us in the Gravity community. It's free to join, and you can connect there with other listeners to the podcast to talk about faith and spirituality and whatever else comes up. To join, go to gravitycommons.com/community. The Gravity Podcast is produced by Ben Sternke and Matt Tebbe. Aaron Sternke edits and mixes the podcast. You can check out his mixing, engineering, and production work at aaronsternke.com. Finally, we would love to hear from you. To record a question or comment for us, you can go to gravitycommons.com/message and click the start recording button. You can also email us at podcast@gravitycommons.com. Catch you next time.